This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We taped Discover Lafayette at Raider's headquarters in the Oil Center of Lafayette. Raider is a managed IT service provider that offers world-class service, including cybersecurity, communications, and technology support. With Raider, you have just one vendor and one number to call, allowing you to concentrate on what is most important, your business. For more information, visit RaiderSolutions.com. And while we're talking about Raider, many thanks to Jason Sikora of Raider, who records and mixes our sound, ensuring a professional podcast production. The generosity of Ochsner Lafayette General makes this podcast possible. Ochsner Lafayette General understands that each patient is unique, and so is your path to good health, from the miracle of childbirth to the mending of broken bones or the journey through cancer. Ochsner's physician and care teams provide access to more than 90 specialties and an ever-expanding list of convenient locations right here in Acadiana. With Ochsner Lafayette General, you're cared for through every stage of life, and healing isn't just a destination. It's a journey we walk together. For more information, visit ochsner.org/Lafayette. Today's podcast is brought to you by Lafayette-based VieMed, a national leader in post-acute respiratory care and sleep therapy. VieMed currently serves over 96,000 patients throughout the U.S. and employs nearly 1,000 people, including hundreds of dedicated respiratory therapists who help those diagnosed with COPD breathe better. VieMed is committed to empowering people to live their life, the company's motto. Visit VieMed.com for info about how they can help you breathe or sleep better. Randy Daniel joins us today in partnership with Eat Lafayette, a year-long celebration of locally owned restaurants. Randy is a principal with OMW Restaurant Holdings, the owner of La Pizzeria, and operating partner with Mercy Kitchen, Palmier, BJ's Pizza House, as well as Cat Daddy Wings, a delivery-only restaurant. Each of these restaurants offers a unique culture and cuisine. Randy, I want to also thank you for taking time today. I know you probably don't have much spare time, and when you're not running restaurants, you're serving as Acadiana chapter president of the Louisiana Restaurant Association and also on the state board. So I was just so glad we could get you on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for joining Discover Lafayette. So I mentioned Eat Lafayette at the beginning. Ben Berthelot, he's been so great about partnering with Discover Lafayette, and once a month we select somebody that really is outstanding in our locally owned restaurant industry, and he was really wanting to get you on the show. I'm just so you know that.
We had a meeting, a board meeting last week, and Ben was there, and I'm always in awe at what he's able to do for our economy and in our area. He brings so much to us, and I'm just so appreciative for what he does.
Yeah. So I don't even know where you want to begin. The restaurant business to me seems like such a difficult business as far as you were telling us before the podcast started. Low margin of error, long hours.
I started this when I was, don't tell anybody, about 14 years old, working in the catering back in the dish room, and I fell in love with it. It's a job of love. If you don't enjoy doing it, you shouldn't. But it is getting increasingly more and more difficult with margins. The average restaurant makes 1 cent on every dollar of sales.
That's incredible. I mean,
and it is, and it's getting tougher and tougher. I'm fortunate that because of what I do with the Louisiana Restaurant Association, I get to see it's not just me that has these issues. Mm-hmm. So next month we're going to, as a group, going up to Washington, D.C. to meet with our members of Congress and have a meeting with them. And we had a call last week with Senator Kennedy, and I was explaining to him the costs that we have and how they've increased. And it's just a daily struggle to figure out ways to continue to make money in this, in not just this market, the entire state.
And most of us, when we're eating out, we're not really thinking about
margins or staff issues or the rent skyrocketing or insurance probably. There's so much that goes into serving a nice piece of fish, right?
Correct, correct. There's just so much that's behind the scenes. There's always been a mathematical equation I use to figure out how much to charge for something on a menu. You figure out how much it costs you to buy, you do a times the multiplier, and that's what you charge. That multiplier doesn't work anymore, not because the math is off. It's because in reality, customers aren't willing to pay what it costs to create these days. And we've seen a 20% increase in food costs since COVID hit, and that's not going to go down. We've seen a 30% increase in labor cost, and that's not going to go down. We've seen insurance premiums go up left and right. The only thing that's not increasing on significant amounts, in all honesty, is rent because it's contractual. So, so when we have an influx of one cost, we can pivot and divert and figure out ways to make it work. But we are seeing increases on all levels of what it is. And so it just makes it more and more difficult. When you have one penny that you make on a dollar, on average, that's average. Some restaurants do better. It makes it more and more difficult. And there were some stories that I was hearing last week. There's a major restaurant, local restaurant chain, that has not made a dollar this year. And their sales, their sales aren't down. Their sales are actually up. But just because of the matrices and the way they work, we were discussing it. And our number one competitor now is grocery stores. Not because customers aren't ready to spend what it's costing to make things these days.
And I wonder if some of them just can't. You know, like you're saying, every family's been hit with increasing cost. And I think with COVID too, I think people change some of their habits.
I think habits did change. And so that's the other thing is, while we do see sales increased, another factor is we're using more and more third-party delivery companies. We're having to box food items now a lot more than they were. Now, look, I have two pizza restaurants. We boxed everything in the first place. And in COVID, we were, La Pizzeria, we were very fortunate because we were a to-go item compared to other restaurants. My partner, Stuart Ottinger, has broken eggs in Baton Rouge and in Nashville. They weren't a to-go restaurant. So it was very difficult for them compared to what I was doing here in Lafayette. But those costs continue to grow because you see a mix. And then the other big one is, we've gone from a cash society to a credit card society. And I'm not talking about credit card debt. I'm talking about the use of it.
And which the restaurant has to cover.
Which the restaurant has to cover. Yeah. There was a big push a couple of years ago about charging the customer the fees on the credit card. I am personally dead set against that. I think it's, the old thing I would tell people is you bake it in the cake, it's part of the cost. But like I mentioned earlier, that mathematical equation is not working anymore. So there are desperate restaurant owners that are turning around and figuring out ways to pass it on. So if you have a restaurant that is doing $1 million in sales, they're paying $40,000 to the credit card companies for processing fees.
Yeah, but no one has cash like they used to.
Nobody uses cash anymore.
Right. I'm glad you brought up Stuart Ottinger. He's a very good friend of mine. I'm close with his parents and Talbot, his brother. And I've watched you for years. I think we met through Romicelli.
Correct.
You'd opened that up in Correct Farms. And then Stuart, I remember them opening up Otters way back where Whataburger is now on Pinhook. But I didn't realize you guys were partners until we got this interview together.
So Stuart and I go back. So I was with Outback Steakhouse for about 18 years. And Stuart was the president of Double R Restaurant Group. Double R Restaurant Group had most of the broken eggs in the Southeast, with the exclusion of Lafayette and a few in Alabama. And it also had Romicelli's. And so he and I got together, and I came in for him to take over Romicelli's to expand it. And we also, at the time, acquired Poor.
Oh, okay.
And so so I was working for him directly. And then Double R Restaurant Group made a decision that they were going to dissolve. And so they sold off all the restaurants. So we went our separate ways. And that's when I bought La Pizzeria in February of 2020. Mm-hmm. Note that date. That was
good timing.
We remodeled and had 2 weeks of business before COVID hit. And
but it's a great restaurant.
It is a great restaurant. Yeah. Stuart did. He went the Broken Egg route, and he was in Baton Rouge, and he was also in Nashville. But we had always talked about coming back together and doing stuff in Lafayette. It's where we live. It's what we want to do. But then again, here comes COVID. And so I don't remember the exact date, about a year into COVID, he said, all right, I'm ready. You want to go? And so I said, absolutely. So we sat down and we actually worked in the kitchen of La Pizzeria and came up with the menu for Mercy Kitchen.
Oh.
And we were extremely short-staffed. I was short-staffed at La Pizzeria when we opened that restaurant. It was the hardest staffing I've ever seen in my life.
Were you and Stuart on the staff? Like, were y'all working at the restaurants?
Yes.
Like,
Stuart was bussing tables. I would be in the kitchen. There was a joke. I would be up front in a button-down shirt talking to customers, and I'd go, as soon as I turned the corner in the kitchen, I'd take my button-down shirt off, and I'd go and I'd start frying chicken sandwiches and doing everything else. And I'd put my button shirt back on. I'd go behind the bar and start mixing drinks. And Stuart was the same way. We're both very hands-on when we need to be. But at the same time, it's better when we're not hands-on because our managers need to be running the business.
Mm-hmm. So, right.
But that was an interesting open.
So La Pizzeria, when you bought it, had been in business
for
a long time.
Been around, I guess, now for close to 29 years.
Yeah, it's a family staple.
Like, it is. It had gone from the original owners to another owner who had opened up a second location up in Upper Lafayette. And then some things happened, and a couple of gentlemen bought it. When I got it, it was in dire straits.
Oh, okay.
Not in a bad way, but it was. I was reminded of all that again about 4 months ago when we reopened BJ's. You know, came in and it had carpet in it from the 80s and hadn't been updated. And so we came in, my wife and I came in, and we took La Pizzeria down to the studs. And I think I hung more sheetrock than anybody else in that place. And we worked and worked and worked to get it back open. And our goal was to open it for Valentine's Day. We missed that by about a week. And so, again, with the LRA, I was in D.C. the week after that. I was in a meeting with the Speaker of House now, but not then, Mike Johnson. And he goes, excuse me, gentlemen, he had to step away. I got a meeting I have to go to. Just wait here. And he runs off for about 20, maybe 30 minutes, and he comes back, and he goes, look, gentlemen, I just met with Mike Pence. They're going to announce in 3 days they're shutting the country down.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm sitting there in an office going, okay, I just opened a restaurant
this
a week
can't
ago.
Be. I know. And who believed it?
Yeah,
really,
who believed it? Now, that was probably the most fortunate I've ever been in a meeting, because I was able to fly home, sit down with my managers. We came up with a plan. I sat down with all of them. I had two salaried managers at the time. And I said, we have two choices. I said, we can all work 7 days a week and stay open and continue to get paid the best we can. And we'll keep as many hourly staff as we can. I said, or we don't. And we have to close the doors. At the time, we didn't know there was going to be PPP. We didn't know any of that stuff was going to exist. And to my manager's credit, they said, we're in it. Let's do this. So that's what we did. And literally would go in and sit across the street from Chick-fil-A where there would be 65 cars in line, and we would wait for our occasional order to come in and pick up.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
It would be myself and one other person in the kitchen, and then Stacy Fillingham, who's my director of operations now for all the restaurants, would be up front, and we'd have one hourly. Mm-hmm. And there were times that, you know, we would basically sleep in the restaurant and wait for the phone to ring. And then between Chick-fil-A and the pool place across that right next to me, there'd be a line at those two. And so, look, if
you're like over there waving your arms.
Yeah,
hey,
I tell you if there were ever going to be a business I jumped into knowing that there was going to be a pandemic, it would be pool supplies.
Would it?
Because everybody stayed at home and they were just worried about their pool. And God bless them. I'm glad they had to do it. But they would have lines every single day.
God.
If you can make it through that.
Yeah, you can survive anything.
Mm-hmm.
We're here with Jason Sikora. I meant to mention Jason. He's been through all these interviews with different restaurant owners. And Randy, I'm thinking back, I did this one by Zoom, but I interviewed Ruffin Rodrigue in April of 2020. And I mean, things were just falling apart.
Yeah.
And it was heartbreaking.
And we miss Ruffin, don't we?
I know.
So yeah, he came in
right
before he passed, he came into La Pizzeria with me and we did an interview with the Advocate together.
He did?
Mm-hmm. And Ruffin,
talking about the struggles of the industry.
I believe so. I don't remember the exact. There was some, because I was the president of the Acadian chapter. I was doing interviews every 3 days and advocating for restaurants and begging people to order to-go food from not just myself, from anybody. It's one of those weird hats you wear where you want to say, "Hey, come to La Pizzeria," but you can't say that. You say, "All right, go to your local restaurant, support your local restaurants." Mm-hmm. And he came in to meet with them, and but Ruffin I've known forever. When my wife and I were in college together, I remember Ruffin singing "Happy Birthday" to her in Ivar's, and but we really miss him. But So he was a titan in the industry, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So serving as you do, I want to talk about your individual restaurants, but serving as you do as a leader, not only in Acadiana, but at the state level with the Restaurant Association. Is it a mentorship thing? Like, tell me what you get out of that, because I know it takes a lot of time, but you must learn so much and you also give so,
the, so
much.
So the two main arms of the Louisiana Restaurant Association is, first, it has one wing that sells workers' comp insurance, which this is not what we do. We're not what I do. I'm on the volunteer side of it. We have our PAC, Political Action Committee, which is the largest PAC in the state. And we also have have our Education Foundation, which is really, really important. It's important to us. Me personally, we don't get to do as much in Lafayette as I'd like to with that, and I'll explain that to you in a minute. So the Political Action Committee is very, very important. Every year, for whatever reason, there are laws that are, particularly state is what we deal with, where they're trying to do things, and the representatives in Baton Rouge, for whatever reason, are coming up with these great ideas to how to fix things, and it's very, very anti-business. So the number one thing that we see every year is the minimum wage. So we pay our servers $2.13 an hour. And anybody that hears that's like, how do you get away with $2.13 an hour? Well, it's not real. Our servers have to average minimum wage with their tips in that $2.13 an hour. If not, there's what's called make pay. And so we have to pay the difference. Now, every server, and this goes back to when I started, I'm not going to say when, waiting tables should average $30 to $50
really?
An hour.
That's
now,
a good
I don't know what their forms say that they send the IRS, but that's what it should be.
I would think probably not that.
No, not at all. If I have a server that I'm having to pay make pay to,
they probably shouldn't be
a server.
It would be like me. Yeah,
correct.
You wouldn't want me on your payroll.
Correct.
I tried waiting tables for a very short time. It's a profession.
So you got the sympathy tips.
I would get tips for people. They would give me money just to leave them alone, like $20.
Yeah,
they go, just don't come back to our table.
Correct. So every year there's a particular representative in Northeast Louisiana who tries to take away tip credit from us. And again, we talked about margins earlier, right? So if we were to increase to, let's say minimum wage goes to $12 an hour. And look, there's no restaurant that hires a back-of-the-house employee for less than $13 an hour right now. So minimum wage is an obscure number because it's not realistic. If we had to pay that to the front of the house, right, we would have to turn around and raise prices phenomenally just to cover labor. So we're already running 25 to 35% labor cost in our business. And now you're talking about pushing up to 55, 65%. We don't have that to work with. Now, our staff is making money. I can promise you that. If they didn't, we wouldn't have them.
Right, right.
You know, nobody works for free, and at least not a second day. So, so that's one of the things. So our PAC works very, very hard to do that. And we have a great group that we work with. It doesn't matter if you're Republican, Democrat. We're going to work with whoever it is. And it's about promoting our business and keeping our business thriving. We are, as an industry, the number one employer in the state.
I just didn't know all this. I mean, the biggest PAC, the biggest employer.
But now, if you take every restaurant and you take every employer, we are the number one employer in the state. So
you learn a
private
lot,
employer.
Right, private employer, not the universities and all.
Correct.
But you learn from your peers too, right? Like you talk about this, like we all know, but I don't think most people understand how important the restaurant industry is.
No, it's crucial. It's crucial to our economy. We are, you know, can you think of, I'm sure you've done fundraisers and there's not a day that goes by that we don't get a phone call. And the answer is always yes. Can you donate gift cards? Can you give us time? Can you help out with this? Because our community is who we depend on. And so we always want to support our community. And that's not me. That's everybody in this business. So with the LRA, there is mentorship. That's more on the education side. Mm-hmm. And we'll cover that in just a minute. And yes, I do talk to everybody across the state. I'm fortunate that I get to do that. I learn what's working in Baton Rouge. I learn what's working in New Orleans. They ask me questions because it's all different markets, different things.
So they have different things go differently right across the state.
Oh, very, very different. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't want to be in the French Quarter doing business right now. It's very, very tough, and they're fixing it.
Yeah,
I'll give the governor credit. They're moving that that state trooper substation downtown in the French Quarter, and it's helping them out. But, you know, tourism, which is the backbone of our state, we get some here in Lafayette, but New Orleans, you know, they really carry our state with their tourism. So we need the French Quarter to be profitable. Mm-hmm. We need it to be, we need those tourist dollars coming in. And I think they're down 30% this year.
Is it a safety concern? Is that what's causing the issues or just prices?
I would say safety concern. You know, and I'm not the expert on New Orleans, what's going on in New Orleans. But I know that they were all excited because there had been no shootings in the French Quarter at Mardi Gras until the last day. It finally happened.
Oh, my goodness.
I know they pulled 176 guns out of the French Quarter during Mardi Gras. It's...
We're lucky here.
Yeah. I mean, I love Lafayette. I'm from Baton Rouge. I love Lafayette. Mm-hmm. It is the largest city of a small hometown I've been in.
Yeah.
So, and I've lived in North Louisiana. I've lived in Baton Rouge. Never did bother doing New Orleans. It's a little too big for me. Mm-hmm. So.
Where'd you go to high school in Baton
Rouge? I went
to
U-High, Louisiana State University Lab School.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm from Baton Rouge too. So.
Yeah. I was the first one that went there for 13 years in that first group. I went from kindergarten until I graduated.
You were fortunate.
I was. And then I got the heck out of the state, went to Ole Miss for 2 years and asked what the heck I was doing. So I moved back to LSU and that's when I started working for Outback Steakhouse and never turned back.
Yeah. You and Stuart both went to Ole Miss.
He's a couple of years younger than me. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You were mentioning before we go to your restaurants about education. Is there anything you wanted to talk about education through
That's the other big side of the volunteer side is we have our education foundation. And what we do is we raise money for something that's called ProStart. And we actually go in the public school system. And so school's a lot different now than it was when we went. And you have your dedicated career goal that you're going into. And many decide culinary arts. And we go in and we support, we donate money to the schools as far as equipment. We donate our time. We go in and help mentor these young, the next generation of chefs and restaurant managers. 2 weeks ago, they had the competition in New Orleans, and unfortunately, I wasn't able to go this year. And schools will send in a group, and they have to compete. And to watch these kids... And I was talking to the board last week about volunteering their time for it. And I said, if you get a chance, the first thing you should do is a time where you're the timer, because you're the only one that gets to sit there and watch one group the entire time. Mm-hmm. And to watch these high school kids try to function, and many do, as a well-oiled restaurant, and they have certain time limits, certain amount of courses they have to do.
It's like a Gordon Ramsay kind of competition.
Correct. And you look at a state that is so dependent on culinary and tourism dollars. And so it's working to build that next generation. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, we don't have that many ProStart schools here in Lafayette.
What about the Career Center? Have you been in there?
The Career Center, I believe, is there.
Yeah, and there's, the culinary.
And there's one other. We are working hard with our school board to try to get some more in. There's some hurdles with anything that's a system. But, you know, at one point, we have a lot in the surrounding areas of Lafayette. Mm-hmm. It's just Lafayette proper. We don't have very many.
And, you know— And not only does not everyone want to go to college or you know, trade school, but to learn that early on.
Yeah.
Like you're saying, there's such a need for it.
There is a need for it.
Such a great career.
And look, when I was in high school, you had no choice. You went to college. Mm-hmm. That's what was preached in your head.
What did you study?
I was in general business. In all honesty, I probably could have saved a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of bar tabs and just gone to a 2-year program for what I do, because 90% of what I learned is through the grinding it out in the restaurants. I had a blast at college, and if my kids want to go, they're going. At the same time, I tell my son, if you want to be a plumber, you make good money being a plumber.
Yeah, and people need that.
And they need it, yeah.
Right. Right.
So
when did you learn, like, are you a chef?
No.
You don't think you're a chef?
No. I don't consider myself a chef at all. Can I get in the kitchen and cook? Absolutely. Uh-huh. There are some people in this state that are phenomenal chefs. Eric Cook with Grigory in New Orleans is one of those people that I think of all the time that can take anything and make it something. I can come up with some real, I think, good dishes, but I'm more like what you cook at home. Where he's more where, you know.
You make a mean omelet.
I can make a hell of an omelet or pizza.
So when did you were with Outback.
Mm-hmm.
What got you into that? Was it just the business end that got you to work with Outback?
So Outback, I went in 1999. I started working with them. And that was when they were in Baton Rouge. And I worked for a gentleman named Dwayne Carpenter. And I had a friend who was there. And I had experience. I'd been bartending and waiting tables, but they would only hire busboys. You had to go in their system as a busboy and start because you fought for that job. And at the time, it was a company that was just amazing. It took care of its people. Its philosophy was, if you take care of your people, they will take care of your company. And it's a philosophy I try to live by now. I went in as a busboy, moved up through the ranks very quickly. Became an hourly key. And then the gentleman that was the joint venture partner for the two states named Bruce Attinger, who I still talk to once a week to this day, hired me as his regional service tech for Louisiana, Arkansas. So under him, I was going and traveling and working with 24 restaurants across two states. As soon as I got that job, it seems like as soon as I get something new, something happens. I was in the Marine Corps Reserves. We got activated.
Oh, no.
And it was great.
Where'd you go?
I went to Iraq.
You did?
Mm-hmm. So I was in Iraq from the beginning of that for 6 months plus. And when I came back, it was waiting for me. And I went back to that. I married my wife, Gretchen, who you know, who we met at Outback. She was a host when I was a busboy. And we got married, and that's when I decided I wasn't going to travel anymore. So I became a managing partner up in Shreveport because I didn't want to travel. So I became a managing partner. So I stayed home and worked 80 hours a week with three kids. And I took a Lafayette girl to Lafayette. And so after my 5-year contract was done, she said, okay,
back home.
It's time to get back to Lafayette. And so that's how I ran into Stewart and Double R Restaurant Group and got here in Lafayette. Yeah.
Outback, I've just heard so many good things about their management team.
It is probably the best management training out there.
Uh-huh.
It's a 3-month training program.
Yeah.
I wish I could do a 3-month training program, but I don't have 800 restaurants across the country to support that.
But you've got a good base for business.
I have a good base, and we do a good job training. But that was a deal where you started, and you would have to work. You know, as part of training, you would work as a busboy, as a hostess, as a bartender, and you'd work your way up. And 3 months later, you would be a junior manager or manager, and then you'd have to do that. And then if you were fortunate enough to get a managing partner, and their proprietorship, they were, I'm not sure they still are, a true proprietorship. You were, as the proprietor, 10% owner of that restaurant. Wow.
So you have a real stake in the success.
You have a real stake in the success, correct.
Yeah,
if the restaurant failed, you failed. If the restaurant was prosperous, you were prosperous.
Mm-hmm. So. Let's talk about your restaurants. I'd like to start first with one I was not familiar with, Cat Daddy Wings,
Cat Daddy Wings is the result of COVID. So when delivery only was a thing, you know, we had La Pizzeria, which was doing well, and I got a phone call from the owner of Planet Hollywood. Don't know how I got a phone call from mm-hmm. him, and he was telling me about ghost kitchens. And he wanted me to go into business with him in Lafayette and open up a whole bunch of ghost kitchens. And it was a bunch of, you know, off-the-wall stuff. And
what kind of food?
There were burgers. There had some that were burgers. There were cinnamon rolls. There was anything in the world. They had a deal. And basically, you just ordered it, and you went to your existing kitchen, and you sold it. Nobody knew it was from you. And so I said, oh, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Why am I going to share that with you? You know, appreciate the right. idea. And I'd been thinking about it kind of, and it kind of just got me going. So I said, you know what? I can do that. Mm-hmm. So I love wings. It's one of my favorite things. It's something that I could do out of the kitchen at La Pizzeria and do multiple items. There was a little bit of crossover and sell it through third-party vendors. We rolled it out very, very quickly, and we were one of the first ones in Lafayette to do it. And so Cat Daddy Wings was born. This is something I'd love to see in a brick and mortar one day.
The menu looked delicious.
It's amazing. Like
fun food.
It's fun food. It's, you know, been drinking beer, yep. Eat some wings.
Some fried.
There you go. Fried pickles.
Fried pickles, yep.
You know, so, but it's basically.
Get a little crunch in there.
wings that you can get in a large array of flavors. It's mainly fried stuff. Mm-hmm. So if you're not into fried, well, you don't want Cat Daddy wings.
Yeah, I don't know if I saw green beans on the menu. Maybe you have them.
I could add fried green beans.
Okay, yeah.
So.
P.F. Chang, so.
Yeah. So, but it, and so that's where that came from. We did a whole lot of it mm-hmm. during COVID. And then with everything else going on, it's still there. I haven't, in all honesty, it's just, that takes care of itself. Mm-hmm. My crew runs out of it. If you walk in La Pizzeria and you say, I want Cat Daddy wings, they're going to look at you like you're crazy, but that's really where it kind of comes from. So, but it, you know, it was just another way of driving revenue to keep the doors open during mm-hmm. COVID.
So La Pizzeria made it through COVID and still very popular. The menu looks great. I mean, just want to talk about that. Have y'all changed things up from the time you bought it?
So there's, we'll get into the other restaurant in a minute, but there's been two restaurants that I either own or are a part of that were staples in Lafayette. And La Pizzeria, I learned some valuable lessons as far as changing things.
Oh, yeah. People don't like change.
People do not mm-hmm. like change. So our most popular salad is the pesto pasta salad. And it's a grilled chicken breast on on a bed of Caesar salad with our pesto pasta salad on top of that with garnishes and stuff. And so I came in, and the first thing I did with La Pizzeria is I changed the chicken to a fresh grilled chicken breast. And they were using a product before that I didn't approve of personally. It was a highly hormone-injected product. And I had a customer complain to me about the change one time, and because it was so tender because it was injected.
Yeah.
And I got on my knees because I get on eye level with the customer. And I said, I'm sorry, I wouldn't serve this to my daughter. And if I'm not going to serve it to my family, I just can't serve it to you. And they understood that. The mistake I made was it was served with penne pasta, and I changed it to cavatappi pasta,
oh.
which you would think wouldn't be a big deal. And I changed it because the cavatappi is like a spiral pasta, and uh-huh. it actually held that pesto dressing better. I might as well have cut some of these wonderful customers' hands off when I did that. That lasted 5 days. And I would go back to penne immediately because people like what they like.
That we do. I don't know, no matter if it's healthy or not, right?
Yeah, they like what they like. Mm-hmm. The chicken I held strong on.
Yeah.
And to this day, you go in, you're going to get a fresh grilled chicken breast mm-hmm. And not what I used to call Chernobyl chickens. They were as big, the breasts themselves were as big as a like turkey
steroids.
Breast.
Yeah.
And they would, you know, and I just can't serve that. So I learned a lesson about buying an existing restaurant, mm-hmm. particularly one that's been around 20 plus years and making changes. You do it subtly and you can make changes as far as quality, but you better keep it the way people like. Because uh-huh. not only did we do that, we took the whole inside down to the studs, we did everything. So, you know, that was a valuable lesson I learned there. And you know, we've built a new customer base. We have you know, returning customers. So, and some people didn't like the changes, but
then you probably got new people
new people. So,
yeah. And so, BJ's Pizza House is another long time.
That was,
staple.
That's the newest one that we did. And, myself,
that was recent, right?
I don't even know. It feels like a year ago, but I think that was about 2.5 months ago. Two local businessmen approached Stuart and I, and they were BJ's customers. They lived in the apartments behind growing up, and they just felt like they couldn't let it go away. Mm-hmm. So they asked Stuart and I if we would team up with them. And, you know, I had to think long and hard about that because I own the pizzeria. And the more I thought about it, I said, you know what?
It's so far away.
But not only that, they're completely different styles. Mm-hmm. So BJ's isn't going to particularly take customers from the pizzeria, and the pizzeria is not going to take customers from BJ's. And so we went in there, and we bought it from Kamal, who had closed it 3 months prior. And again, we took it to the studs, we rebuilt it, put it back in place. This one, I didn't change one recipe. Mm-hmm. I didn't change anything about it. And we worked very hard to keep it the same. The inside's completely redone. We changed it to table service instead of countertop service.
Oh, okay.
Well, and that has to do,
kind of a big,
that has to do with economics as far as the servers go, and I can go into that in a minute. But and then we brought in a bar. So they had beer, but we brought in a bar. Now, when I say a bar, it's BJ's Pizza House. It's a pizza house bar.
Uh-huh.
So if you want bourbon and seven, we got that. If you want an old fashioned, you're going to have to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So
and an inexpensive wine, probably.
An inexpensive wine. We brought in house wine.
Uh-huh.
My theory behind that was if you have 10 people that come in and eat pizza and you have two people that don't particularly like beer, we want to have an option for you, but it's not what we specialize in. Right. We've got 8 wonderful beers on draft. We've got more in the bottle only. But we have one bourbon. Mm-hmm. We have one vodka.
And that's probably all you need.
And that's all we need.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Jason, this is like one of my favorite places to look back on when my girls were little. They went to Martha Olivier, Miss Martha, and for special treats, she would get BJ's pizza. And we lived out in the country at the time, right outside of Lafayette, and we would drive in, though, to go to BJ's. And it was just simple. Mm-hmm. Something about it, though, it's like a family place.
It's not rocket science.
Mm-mm.
It's actually... the menu's a lot easier to execute than the pizzeria. and someone asked me, one of the partners asked me, and they said, well, why is it so much easier? I said, well, the pizzeria, I have 47 toppings on a pizza that you can get. At BJ's, I have 16.
Yeah.
You know.
Y'all do ham and pineapple? Does anybody eat that there?
Yeah. The Hawaiian is on the menu.
Really?
Which is an abomination of a pizza, but I'm kidding.
I kind of agree. I don't know. I never liked that.
I'm kidding. Look.
It's very popular,
I'm involved with two pizza restaurants. My favorite pizza is pepperoni.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a naturalist, as I call it. but I had a kitchen manager that worked for me that the Hawaiian pizza, you nails on a chalkboard for them. I like it. I'll eat it. I think it's good. I like all pizzas, but I always go back to my old faithful pepperoni. Yep.
Either cheese or pepperoni. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Not even cheese. I gotta have pepperoni.
And I guess for people that know, BJ's is over on Congress.
On West Congress.
Kind of by the Bayou Shadows. Is that the apartment complex that's by there?
Correct. Yeah. Right in front of Bayou Shadows. It still has the same benches that I've had more people come in. I went on my first date, looked at my wife and I, our names are sketched right here. And I'm like,
romantic.
There you go.
Yeah. And then just to remind people, La Pizzeria is on Ambassador.
It's on Ambassador, right there in St. Park on lot is Charlie G's.
Right.
It's, again, been there. Still got the original neon sign hanging up front. Mm-hmm. But it's been there. It's been there, like I said, almost 30 years, and BJ's has been here for 45 years.
That's amazing. So Mercy Kitchen is a new concept.
Brand new.
Yeah.
This is not a reiteration of anything. This was the child of Stuart and Colleen Ottinger. Colleen is probably one of the most inventive people I've ever met in my life. And that was, like I said, we were in COVID and Stuart came up and he said, hey, I want to do one in Lafayette. Are you ready? And I said, absolutely. Let's get this figured out. So we worked on the menu and it was going to be Mercy Kitchen, which, you know, Colleen and I have had many conversations about it, and I don't know where she gets these ideas from, but they're amazing. And, you know, Stuart had this idea where how he wanted the menu to go. So we worked together to figure it out. And, you know, some of that menu we put together the day before we opened.
Did?
Absolutely.
Wow.
It, same with Palmier. But we got it figured out. You know, we really focused on high quality food and also matching high quality cocktails. Mm-hmm. Where BJ's has you know, a pizza house bar, the pizzeria has a full bar and can do anything. This was really highly crafted cocktails. We are fortunate. My now general manager at Palmier, Raymond Ward, who was an 18-year-old bartender for me at Poor, came on board with us at Mercy, and he is a mixologist, hand in, you know, just amazing at what he does. And, you know, where I was focusing on food, he was focusing on mm-hmm. cocktails, and he just knocked it out of the park.
That's fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's where Bon Ton Grill was.
That's where Bon Ton Grill was on Verrot.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So we went in.
It's a great location.
Yep. Correct. Right before they moved to where Blue Dog is now. So we moved in there, and we had a designer out of New Orleans who was insane. but she did a great job, and it's just the touches in there, and it's a fun place. And if you really want to go have a good night with your wife or you know, kids are invited, but go in, have a cocktail, have a few shares, and you're guaranteed a good time.
Talk about that menu just for a minute, if you would, for people that haven't been.
So right now, Mercy is primarily its shared items. Then we have a couple burgers and sandwiches, and we can go into detail on that, and then a lot of salads. But it's for a group. So you go in with 4 to 6, 8 people, and you order a couple shares for your table. You have a couple cocktails, and you're going to leave as full as you would if you sat down and had a traditional—
Just like a big platter that people just—
Charcuterie boards, steak and frites. What else do we have on there? It's just all over. It's different. It doesn't follow one. People always try to ask me, you know, well, what kind of food is it? And I'm like, American.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't. It's not Italian. It's not French.
It's not fondue.
It's just this amazing built menu, and we have a great chef over there, Braden Braun, who luckily came in after me and made it all really, really nice. And he's bringing new stuff to the table every day. And we're actually working on a new menu that we're going to be coming out very shortly. Where we're looking to add a few entrees, but mm-hmm. it again is more of a shared mm-hmm. experience for you and either one or two people or up to, you know, as many people as you want. And you're reaching across the table, because I know when I go out to eat and I'm with my wife, and she goes, what are you ordering? And if I say I'm ordering something, she goes, I'm ordering that too. I get really upset.
Yeah.
Because I want her to get something completely different,
so
because I'm going to take half of hers. Mm-hmm. And don't think, if you're eating with me, I'm not going to reach across and eat a bite of yours, because I like, you know, I want a taste of everything. So that's what it's kind of based about.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Palmier is elegant.
Wow. That just Palmier beautiful. is a beautiful location, and Colleen again was the brains behind. She partnered up with a friend of hers, like, and the name escapes me. It was a designer out of mm-hmm. Nashville, and it is decadent as decadent gets. And I did the menu in that one, and that was one where we did the food menu about a week before we opened. And it wasn't because it was just because it was cocktails, high end cocktails. Mm-hmm. We wanted you to walk in and feel like you were walking into a bar in Paris, France,
yeah.
and not particularly in the middle of River Ranch mm-hmm. and Lafayette. Nothing against River Ranch, Lafayette. It's a beautiful
area,
but
it just is like another world.
Yeah, I mean, you've
it's
got Versace wallpaper on the walls, and it's decadent as it gets, and the cocktails are amazing. When we first opened up, I felt like I was in Fred's or Murphy's in Baton Rouge. It was so packed, and the whole time, you know, as much as you love the sales, I'm like, man, these customers are not getting the experience we want them to get. Mm-hmm. And I was actually talking to somebody about it yesterday, and they're like, man, I got in early, and I was sitting at the bar, and I was like, well, then you got the real experience, because that's, you know, you come in, sit at a couch, relax,
yeah.
you know, and you know, and that's the experience. We're going to take care of you. Our food menu is simple. but it's elegant, and it's where we, you know, go in there, get a couple little bit to eat, get a couple drinks, go have dinner somewhere, or come in afterwards, or you're done. And it's a place where you forget you're in Lafayette while you're there.
Did Colleen tell me that that's a family name? Is Palmier?
Palmier, I believe, is her grandmother's side. Mm-hmm. And look, I'm not as familiar with the whole Lafayette heritage as it is, but I believe Palmier married Bollier or somewhere. Okay. But yes, it is an old family name.
Mm-hmm. It's so, just so elegant.
The little palm, but Palmier, yeah. Yep.
Well, do you have, I guess you can't say, but all these restaurants are so different. Do you have one that you look at with special pride?
I'm very proud of La Pizzeria because that was, A, it's mine, and B, it was the one I struggled through COVID with. But I love all of them. They're all amazing. I love when I walk in and I see my managers, you know, that's, and what they do, and I see the staff that works for me. When I did the food and beverage for Patty in the Park last week, and we were in an after event meeting that night about midnight, and I said, "Oh, my kids and something," and the person looks at me and goes, your kids were here. I said, no, that was my staff. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, and that's right. You know, I didn't used to call them kids, but now some of them are almost this age of my kids. So, you know, we're a huge family, mm-hmm. and I want all of them to do well. And it's, if they're doing well, I'm doing well.
Right.
If, you know, if I'm having to go in the restaurants and manage the restaurants, then we're not doing well. They're managing it, and we give them the leeway to do that. We're going to give them the direction. We're going to give them the tools. We're going to give them the skills. But as far as a favorite restaurant, no. I mean, I love them all. And, you know, if I want to go on a date night with my wife, we're going to probably go to Mercy and then Palmier. If I want to go with my kids, we're going to go to La Pizzeria or BJ's. It depends, you know, if we're headed out to a UL baseball game, we're going to BJ's. If we're going to the other side of town, you know, so I don't, you know, I how do you have a favorite child? You know,
never.
My daughter's my daughter's my favorite daughter. My oldest son is my favorite oldest son. You know, so.
So you also cater. I'm glad you brought that up. OMW Restaurant Holdings. You do cater.
So correct. So each restaurant is its own catering. So and then as a I also have OMW. Special events where we do multitudes of things, whether it be dinners for 100 people. I've gone in, and one of the fun ones I did was I went in, they had a bunch of friars come in from France, and the host called me in, and we went in and we cooked an authentic Louisiana food for them, and and we did a fish fry and a couple of things, and it was fun. And then we have events like last Saturday where we did food and beverage for 4,500 people.
That's amazing. How do you even plan for that?
It took us probably, I say 6 weeks. We planned it for a year. And it's one of those things that it was smooth. It was easy. At one point I looked at one of my employees, I'm like, I feel like we're doing something wrong because this is so easy, but it's just part of the planning. And that's years of experience.
Right.
You know, we did, Rhythms on the River forever. We took that and as a business between Poor and Roma, we grew it and grew it and grew it and learned some very valuable lessons from that and just apply it to those things. But that's a sell and go item. Mm-hmm. And then you have your nicer events where we're setting up, you know, the silver chafing dishes and doing, you know, full meals and you know, but there's nothing that we can't do. Mm-hmm. You know, the week before that we did Dancing with the Stars for Kathakai New Iberia, where we did bars for 800 people. So it's just all over the place.
When you get hired for big events like Patty in the Park or something, do you just make money based on what people buy, or is it like a guaranteed thing from the sponsor?
There's no guarantee. So this year, when Town Square approached me to take over for Patty, my contingency was it was a partnership. Mm-hmm. So if the event doesn't do well,
you're not up there on the line.
Then I'm not going to do well. So it really, really pushes me to do that. Now, as far as, you know, when if it's that, now that's where it's a company trying to make money that hiring me to make money. So then when we go to an event where, let's say it's a full catered event for a wedding we're going to charge a, you know, we set it up where it's
so much.
And then there's other ones. And my wife was asking me about this the other day, where if, let's say you want us to come to your house and do a cash bar, she was like, well, you know, this other company quoted a price to set up a cash. I said, of course they didn't, sweetheart. And she was like, well, why would you do that? I was like, well, we have no guarantee anybody's going to buy a beer, and we're having to spend money, labor, you know, gas just to get it set up. I said, so every different event's different, and it's contractually different. But it's always about, you know, it's got to be a deal that when the customer walks away, they feel like they were A, taken care of, and B, got their money's worth. So like I said, the deal I made last week was, you know, if you make money, I'm going to make money. If you don't make money, then neither will I.
Right.
So it could have been a year of planning for nothing. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, we did well. You know, we could always do better.
Yep.
So
I was going to ask a question, but I'm going to leave it for Jason because I know he's going to ask you something about advice. But I was curious, if you weren't in the restaurant business, what do you think you would have done?
Oh, you know, my favorite hobby now is I have chickens in my backyard.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah.
Farmer?
I'm a jack of all trades. I'm just not good at all trades. So I love to work with my hands. I am a card-carrying ADHD child, which is why I think I love the restaurant business so much. Mm-hmm. It'll drive my staff crazy because they'll ask me a question, I'll look them in the face, and I walk away. And it's not that I'm ignoring them. It's just my mind is on something else. And then I'll come up out of the blue an hour later and answer their question. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, what happened? I was like, well, that wasn't my priority at the moment. I had seven fires to put out, and yours was just a little ember.
Yeah.
So, you know, I love to do stuff with my hands. Sitting at a desk in an office is torture to me. So if I could figure out a way to sweep streets and make enough money, I'd probably be happy doing that.
Be outside, enjoying the fresh air. Well, we're here with Jason Sikora. And Jason, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. And thanks for coming down here today.
Oh, my
pleasure. The old Piccadilly, we were talking about that ahead of time. I do have a few questions. It's funny, my last question was going to be, what's your favorite pizza? So you already answered that, but I'm taking credit for the question.
I'm not going to tell you which restaurant, though.
Oh, okay.
Just pepperoni.
I'll narrow it down to two restaurants.
Oh, okay. I think we can probably guess. You mentioned ghost kitchens. For those people who don't know what a ghost kitchen is, can you explain that?
So a ghost kitchen is a restaurant that is not a brick and mortar restaurant, meaning you can't go sit down in it and eat. So, but you can get it delivered. So it's got to come from somewhere. Mm-hmm. So, I'll give you an example. During COVID, Chuck E. Cheese opened a ghost kitchen. They were selling pizza under a different name.
Really?
Absolutely. And so they did that. So it's for me, it's when I make, you know, one of my restaurants does all the food for Cat Daddy Wings, but you can't go into any restaurant and order Cat Daddy Wings.
Got ya. Mm-hmm. Interesting. It's an interesting concept. I love it. So we've had, you know, some other restaurant owners on here. Some, like yourself, purchase restaurants and some start new ones. Do you find it easier to purchase old restaurants, or do you think it's harder maybe going that route?
They both have their ups and downs. When you purchase an existing restaurant, you're purchasing usually recipes. You're also purchasing their good habits, and you're also purchasing their bad habits.
Yeah.
And the industry has changed tremendously over the last 10 years with upgrades and technology, points of sales. It's amazing. I can look on my phone right now and tell you how many tables are sat at every single restaurant, wow, what they've sold, how many pizzas. And so there's analytics that you can see now that a lot of the restaurants, you know, the owner of BJ's did a great job, but he was stuck in what he knew, right? Yeah. And don't get me wrong, 5 years from now, someone's going to say that I'm stuck in what I do. So, so when you buying the existing is great. Mercy Kitchen and Palmier were much more stressful because when you're having to come up with all the recipes and all the changes and where the toilet paper dispenser is going to go and what light to put on the ceiling, that's very stressful. Now, they're both great in different ways. Yeah. I love the fact that, you know, in La Pizzeria and BJ's Pizza House, now you're looking at, what, 85 years of restaurant history in Lafayette.
Yeah.
Right? And I hope that we get there with Mercy Kitchen and Palmyre. So, you know, and there's part of that heritage, keeping that heritage. You know, we were joking a second ago about, you know, what my favorite pizza is. And, you know, I'll get some people that'll come to me and they'll say, you know, La Pizzeria, you really need a thin, thin, thin crust. And I explained to them, I said, that's not La Pizzeria. Yeah. I said, pizzas are like everything. So there's, you know, I'm never going to make a pizza that everybody in this city likes. I said, but they can go somewhere for that.
Yeah.
You know, I need to specialize. This, La Pizzeria is the pizza that I like. You know, BJ's is the pizza that I like.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't mean that everything I do is just what I like, but, you know, I can't do the same pizza as everybody else. I'm not trying to do the same pizza as everybody else. So, but a pepperoni pizza from BJ's or La Pizzeria are my favorite.
That's right.
Well said.
There we go. You mentioned technology. I actually had a question about social media, but how important has technology and social media been to your businesses?
It's come a long way. It's very, very important, and it grows and grows and grows. So now, for example, with those two pizza restaurants, we can, with the touch of a button, reach thousands of people mm-hmm. via text, via email, and then many, many more via Facebook. I do think that social media is, you're lost in a sea.
Okay.
It's very hard, you know, to be seen in social media these days because there's so much out there. At La Pizzeria and BJ's, for example, we focus more on food. We're going to send you pictures of food. We're going to talk about food. Well, Mercy and Palmyre, we're focusing more on the social aspect or the environment, the experience. But it's very important. It's very important to remind people that you're there. But it's also analytically impossible to see your return on your investment. But it's also very inexpensive.
Yeah.
You know, I can get on my phone right here and I can send posts out from every single restaurant immediately. Today is Monday, but let's say it's Wednesday at 3:00. I can text everybody, send 1,500 people a text and say, hey, wine down Wednesday, half off bottles of wine at La Pizzeria. Or, hey, on your way to the UL game today, stop by BJ's and grab a pizza. Or on their way home, grab a pitcher of beer. So in those respects, it's great for finding targeted experiences that you can do. Mm-hmm. We don't do those specific targeted experiences for Mercy and Palmyre because we're pushing the social aspect more than that. So there we're focused more, you know, it's just different levels or different feelings that we're trying to promote on the two.
Got ya. And then, the advice question. So if you could maybe, if one of your children wanted to follow in your footsteps or somebody else, what advice would you give them?
Well, my oldest son has jokingly said he does.
Okay.
So being that I am a privately owned company at La Pizzeria, I let him start washing dishes.
Okay.
And he I don't think he liked it. So maybe it's not for him, but maybe it's good that he sees that. But I, you know, there were many, many years of my kids' lives, particularly when they were young. I didn't get to see them very much. I'd get home at 2:00 in the morning and then I'd get a kiss in bed from my kids on their way to school. And then I'd be at work at 11. And that's one of the reasons. The other reason I left Outback was because the hours and not seeing my children and my oldest, when he was 7 years old, and I realized I'd missed so much.
Yeah.
But it is a labor of love. And if you work hard and you're good to people and you're honest, you will make it up the ranks because some people, so they don't. Get in there, do the worst jobs in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And if you stick with it, you're meant to be in the restaurant. There's not a job in any of the four restaurants that I wouldn't do. I will go wash dishes tomorrow. I will dump trash tomorrow. And I hope to be that until I physically can't because I don't expect anything from anybody that I don't do. So if the owner's sons that I worked with growing up felt like they were going to walk in and just going to be the number one person in charge, no. You have to learn to dump trash and scrub floors and clean toilets as much as anybody else.
Yeah.
So. Well,
and with that, a big shout out to your staff. I worked as a short order cook, as a dishwasher, as a busboy. that is a hard job.
It is a
all
hard
that
job.
Is really tough, and you're sweating, and it's long hours, and so hats off to all of them.
Yeah, and it always amazed me that I could do this and they do this. So you worked in the kitchen. You know how vulgar our mouths are in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's amazing how we will turn that corner to the front of the restaurant, and yes, ma'am, yes, sir, yes, please, happy, and you turn the other corner, and I can't say it on the podcast.
Yeah,
but
that kitchen door is a barrier.
It's amazing. We strategically put speakers above those doors to drown out the voices from the kitchen.
That's smart. Well, again, thanks for coming down here. It's been amazing.
It's been my pleasure. Has it been an hour already?
We're right there at the hour. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. Well, Randy Daniel, OMW Restaurant Holdings, thank you for taking your time to come join us and share your story.
My pleasure. And look, y'all come see us, but if you don't come see us at one of those four restaurants, go see one of your other local restaurants. We need you to come visit us more than ever.
Well said. And that's what makes Lafayette unique, is our locally owned
restaurants. We have a great, great community of restaurants.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And I want to thank Ben Berthelot and his team at Lafayette Travel. Eat Lafayette is a sponsor of this show, and they wanted to make sure that your story and your company's story was told.
Eat Lafayette's phenomenal, and thank y'all so much for covering this stuff.
It's our pleasure. Also want to thank our other sponsors besides Raider, of course, Ochsner, Lafayette General, and Vimed. We couldn't do this without your generosity. And also to our listeners, thank you for your loyal support. You can check out Randy's interview, of course, at discoverlafayette.net, or you can subscribe to this podcast if you haven't, wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for listening. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.